Man, I can let that play all day. Welcome to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review classic episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling Program, as they appear on the WWE Network, and hopefully add a little historical context to them to boot. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by my co-host Roman Gomez, and this is proper episode number 9. And on this edition, we'll be taking a look at the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling episode, which was taped on Wednesday, March 3rd, 1982, at the WPCQ Studios, Channel 36, in Charlotte, North Carolina, and aired in local markets on Saturday, March 6th, 1982. Before we go on, I want to introduce and invite my co-host in right now, Roman Gomez. Roman, how have you been, my friend?
I'm doing good. The week was a little bit better. Got to hang out with Barry Rose from Breaking Kayfabe on the Arcadian Vanguard Network, and we had a good time, you know, meeting him, and things are getting back a little bit more to normal, which is good to hear.
Oh, that's nice. What was Barry doing out there?
He was out here for work, and he had a little free time on Sunday, so we got together and had dinner and kind of played catch-up and talked wrestling and everything, and it was really cool meeting him. He's a very good, very nice guy.
They do such a great job over on that show, Breaking Kayfabe, with Bowdrin and Barry, and Jeff Bowdrin has been doing a bang-up job, too, filling in for Brian on the Ron Fuller Studcast. Barry, I first became familiar with on the old kayfabememories.com website because he used to do features there, and one that sticks out in my mind is when he interviewed Crimson Mask and got some opinions on the top 25 angles in Florida history. And as somebody that unfortunately came to Florida late because of where I grew up in the D.C. area and when I grew up in the 80s, by the time I got Florida, it was essentially a bastardized version of it before Jim Crockett bought it and they started airing it on Home Team Sports. So I didn't get to see the great days of it, and to go back and look at that list and to see Don Morocco, the Mr. M angle, and the Boris Malenko stuff, and you all of this great history and all of these amazing things that influenced so many other people, the booking of Eddie Graham and the tree that spawned so many, including Bill Watts and Dusty Rhodes and so many other people. You know, they have just done an excellent job over there with their show, and Barry doing just probably the foremost. I don't know if he is or not, but when I think about Florida history and going to somebody for an answer, he's always the first one that comes to mind. And they have a hell of an archives, too. I think he's also the one that does the North Albany collection of videos over there on YouTube as well, too. So just it's great to be associated with those guys. And it's great you got the ability to go and hang out with them because, you know, for me, Roman, I know you're, you know, around my age and everything. I wasn't a tape trader. So like guys like John McAdam, you know, I wasn't familiar with it, and I also wasn't a heavy newsletter guy. As much as I liked listening to radio shows and that sort of stuff, I had gotten sample issues of like Wade Keller and Dave Meltzer and Steve Beverly and some other people, but I didn't realize how involved that those guys were and how involved that they've been for so long. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was great talking old school wrestling with Barry, and it was just a fun time just to kind of unwind and get away from work a little bit and just talk wrestling. And something I wanted to say, Mike, I don't know if you're well aware of it or not, but today is Ricky Steamboat's birthday, you know, Mid-Atlantic legend, and it's also would have been the Missing Link's birthday.
Oh, man, one of my favorite all-time wrestlers, obviously, Ricky Steamboat, and we're also a couple of days removed from it not only being my birthday, but the birthday of Nature Boy Ric Flair, another name that is synonymous with Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. And unfortunately, I want to balance that out with a little bit of sad news, one that it's directly associated with Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, and one that it really is not, although his is a name that was just involved in the Atlanta portion of the 1982 NWA World Tag Team Championship Tournament. Teaming with Buddy Rose in Atlanta was Rip Oliver. Rick Oliver, Rip the Crippler Oliver, as he was better known, didn't have really any stakes in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. I'd have to go back and see, but he didn't have an extended run like Mike Miller, another 80s Portland wrestling mainstay, did, and somebody whose name is going to appear on this broadcast. But unfortunately, due to heart issues, he has been put into hospice care. Unfortunately, I saw today Killer Tim Brooks, who I said a couple of weeks ago, I could never imagine anyone cheering Killer Tim Brooks. Well, somebody, and I forget who it was, and I apologize for that, but somebody showed me the error of my ways right here from Mid-Atlantic when Killer Tim Brooks actually came through as Cousin Luke Mulligan, coming in for with Blackjack Mulligan. So at one point he was cheered, and unfortunately I need to mention that he has gone into hospice care as well, according to the Cauliflower Alley Club. So, you know, unfortunately, Killer Tim Brooks and Rick Oliver facing the final bell, so we want to send our best out to them. To get away from that, we should probably get to the show, as I hopefully I haven't brought everyone down here, and I want to thank all of you out there, if you're still listening, for honoring us with your patronage. If you want more content that's related to the show or just want to reach out to us, you can do so via Twitter and Facebook. Just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod for the logo, and you'll see it, and just go ahead and click on there. You can find a couple of our very popular features, On This Day in JCP TV History and hashtag Everyday Arn, where we post video clips celebrating the greatness that was Jim Crockett Promotions Television, as well as the greatness that was the enforcer Arn Anderson. And if you want to follow along with us here as we review episodes of the show, you can do so by signing up for the WWE Network at WWE.com. You can also follow along by way of David Taub's write-ups of the shows, which are available over at MidAtlanticGateway.com. Dick Bourne and David Chappell have done an excellent job with all of their history of Mid-Atlantic Pro Wrestling. One of the great things that MidAtlanticGateway.com does is actually give links to our shows when we're all done. So right next to where David Taub has got his write-ups, you can also find a link for our podcast, which equals up. So we want to really thank them for doing that. That's something they don't have to do, but we really, really appreciate it. And I can speak for Roman to say that we really, really appreciate them for all of the work and the history that they've been able to cultivate and hold on to and expose for a lot of people. And that's what we're here to do, too, when it comes to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. And without further ado, we will get to this week's episode of the show, which, of course, opens up with the horrifying overdub of Don Ray's Got to Have Lovin'. That leads into Roddy Piper and Bob Cottle as our hosts for the show. Dave Hebner is the referee for the entire hour, and Roddy Piper has got on a red sports jacket that multiple times during this episode, Roman, he does his absolute best to try to make sure he gets his blood pressure up to match that thing. I know the colors are a little bit off, you know, with all the digitation and all that good stuff that you've had to do to, like, you know, get the tape ready for digital standards up on the network. But my Lord, is Roddy Piper a couple seconds away from bursting.
Yeah, that jacket was a little bit loud. He definitely drew attention, that's for sure.
And we get a little bit of a preview of the show, but then we get our business picking up. And this isn't a show where there's going to be a ton of business that gets picked up. But one thing we do get is an appearance by Jack and Jerry Briscoe. And if we know anything about the Briscoes and Roddy Piper, it's kind of like oil and water. And that is apparent from when the Briscoes walk in, ready to be interviewed by Roddy and Bob.
Fans, as we say, it's just going to be a great hour with lots of action, just unstoppable action.
And here it comes.
I was going to say, I'd like to get the Briscoes.
Yes, it would be a pleasure. I'm sure it would be a pleasure for them to meet me, too.
Let's see if we can get the Briscoes over right now. Long, long time, Jerry Briscoe. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Jack Briscoe.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, fellas. Delighted to have you back.
Well, it's great to be back in the Mid-Atlantic area. Bob, as you know, we campaigned here a few years back, and it's very, very successful, and we hope to do the same here. And we know there's just tons of talent here. Young man standing right behind you, Roddy Piper. Very outstanding wrestler. I think he's best suited for commentating, but there's a lot of great wrestlers.
Well, you know, since as you bring that up, that commentating, amongst other things, is one of my fortes, I'd like to just, you know, two world champions you're talking about here. There's a lot of wrestling knowledge right here with these two young gentlemen. And I was just wondering a question, you know, most people, for instance, when they decide to fight me, that they're afraid of me before they get in the ring because they know what I can do. And I wonder with you two gentlemen and you, Jack, if you're afraid of somebody, like if you're afraid of me, how do you handle that when you go into the ring?
I've never felt fear in my life, Mr. Piper, so I wouldn't know how to fear you. And furthermore, due to the background and the training that I've had, I've always been taught to go on offensive. So if you're interested in it, I'm willing.
Yeah, but and I didn't mean to insult you now, not at all, because I realize that you're great wrestlers, and I don't, not quite up to my standards. No, don't get me wrong. When I say not quite up to my standards, I mean that I am progressed so much and have so many people training me. I wonder with yourselves and training each other, being brothers, isn't one kind of leaning towards the other? It kind of takes away. Maybe you're leaning on each other where I don't have to lean on anybody.
No, it doesn't take away from anything. Matter of fact, it sharpens up every move, every counter move that you might want to go into. And Gerald being the world champion, myself being the world champion, actually, we've always thought that we were in a caliber, close to yours at least.
Oh, well, then you're thinking right. Yeah, you're thinking right.
Fellas, it's got to be World Tag Team Championships on your mind. That's what it's got to be.
Well, that's right, Bob. And we feel like, that there's a million tag teams around. The Andersons, they had, along with Stan Hansen, Sergeant Slaughter and his gang, Austin Idol and all of his partners. But being brothers is one thing in a tag team combination that's very, very important. There's no egos involved, along with Jack and myself. We know that when we're in, if we get in trouble, we know that we can turn around. There's a partner behind us to tag to, and he's going to come in and give full effort, and there isn't any problem about who's going to do this or who's going to do that. We both go out there with the same attitude, and that is to win the matches.
All right, fellas, I tell you again, we want to welcome you. I know I speak for all of the fans. Good luck to you, and we look forward to seeing you a little later in the program.
Thank you very much.
Jack and Jerry Briscoe, good to have you, Jack. Jerry, fans, we'll be back. We'll have action right here, right after we take this timeout.
Roman, there you hear Jack and Jerry Briscoe banter about with Roddy Piper. To be fair, Jack was the first one to fire at Salvo at Roddy Piper, saying that he was more suited for commentary. Very familiar with each other, although they are not really in crossing universes when they're on the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling show, although we will see more of them as the months and years go on with each other. Any thoughts on the Briscoes being in the area and their back and forth there with the Hot Rod?
I thought it was kind of funny when they came out and Piper's like, yeah, it'd be a pleasure for them to meet me. I just thought that was a funny line by Piper. And Briscoe's obviously a legendary names in the wrestling business. Jack, a former world champion. And Jerry gets kind of lost in the shuffle. He was a former world junior heavyweight champion. So they've definitely got credentials a mile long. And they're an asset anytime when you can get the Briscoes on the program.
And if I'm not mistaken, Jerry Briscoe was the first Mid-Atlantic heavyweight champion in 1973. I'd have to go back and double-check that, but I believe he was the last Eastern States heavyweight champion and was the first Mid-Atlantic heavyweight champion, which they are not synonymous with each other. Jim Crockett Promotions and Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling and the Mid-Atlantic title, they all didn't equal out and match up at the same time, much like a lot of wrestling promotions, what they've actually been known as and what some of their belts have been known as over the years. That's not them. There's probably somebody who grew up looking at Pro Wrestling Illustrated that believes the Memphis territory was known as Mid-Southern.
Right.
One of those weird things that has kind of gone on over the years, but history was mentioned by Bob Cottle of the Briscoes. And in fact, only a couple of years before, they had faced off against Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood in 1983. Back in 1980, a couple of years before this, they had come in and challenged Steamboat and Youngblood for the NWA World Tag Team Championships during that incarnation of their team. And as the months go by, as we talk about the Privates and Sergeant Slaughter and seeing Steamboat and Youngblood get back together again, it's going to be some exciting viewing of this television show, that is for sure. The first match of the day, Austin Idol and Vinny Valentino. And this is a match that went about 6 minutes and 11 seconds. I did not pull any audio from it. But it was classic Austin Idol, and it was a pillar-to-post feature performance for Idol. It took him the first 75 seconds of the match to get his robe and his headband off in perfect Austin Idol style. The bell rang. And unlike Sonny Fargo or Stu Schwartz, Dave Heppner is not going to scream in exactly the same way, but he was doing his best to try to get Idol to get all of that stuff off. And when he did, we got a tour de force because he was facing Vinny Valentino, but we got to see some aggressiveness. We got to see the showmanship. We got to see him be a little bit of a chicken ass on the run after Valentino got some offense in. it was a really good kind of feature of Austin Idol over 6 minutes.
Yeah, you read my mind, Mike. I was thinking the exact same thing. This match had a little bit of everything. And at the very beginning, Idol, he just looked like a star with the robe he has on. And like you said, the long time he took to actually take the robe off, Piper alluded to on the commentary, he said, you know, kind of like from a psychological point of view, it's showing Valentino that he's the boss, that he'll get ready to lock up when he's ready. And I thought it was kind of interesting, too, that Piper kind of put Valentino over when he said that Austin Idol's risking a lot by taking on this match. I thought that was kind of a cool way to throw a bone Valentino's way as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, we saw Vinny Valentino be a part of the crew that celebrated with Ric Flair in the ring after Starrcade 83. And we see him into Starrcade, you know, around 1984 in Mid-Atlantic still as well. And, you know, by that time, you know pretty much exactly where Vinny Valentino is going to fit in his life. But at this point, we didn't know where he was going to be. It's kind of like Ron Ritchie a little bit later on. You know, they were still guys that, you know, are these going to be future players for Jim Crockett or in the wrestling business down the line? And when you do have that situation, you treat him with kid gloves a little bit and you let him go 6 minutes with Austin Idol and get a little bit of offenses. And Vinny Valentino did that and held up his end of the deal. But Austin Idol ends up overpowering him. Vinny Valentino slips up, lets his leg be exposed, which Austin Idol buries against the ring post before locking on the Las Vegas leg lock to get the victory. From there, we get a promo with Jake Roberts. And as you alluded to, I think we maybe were talking about it during the pre-show, but one of the things that Territorial Wrestling would do would be take a situation because of the bicycle loop of the tape and the time that they would usually spend going between cities. If an event took place, say, like in Greensboro on February 21st, where Sergeant Slaughter and his Marines, his recruits, his privates, attacked Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat after their match that they had, they would tend to play that because it ended up becoming a focal point of the area. They would make sure to play that for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it was just the standard staple of the programming. We see that here this week when Jake Roberts comes out and comments on the videotape of Slaughter and his Marines attacking Steamboat and Flair. And I won't play that for you, but everybody that is familiar with old wrestling and old territorial wrestling is, this is not a surprise here. We then move to a match between David Patterson and Rick Benefield, and no, much to everybody's shock, I did not pull any audio from this one either. It only went about 2 minutes and 43 seconds anyway, with David Patterson, a big guy from the Midwest, which they weren't sure, looked like a big, tough guy, was a bruiser, and had solid work, and they weren't exactly sure what they were going to do with him at the time. But they made sure that he was ahead of Rick Benefield on the pecking order, and he defeated Benefield with a Russian leg sweep and a hook victory. But it was during this match where Bob Caudle talked to Roddy Piper about some of Piper's comments earlier on about that tape that Jake Roberts commented over of Slaughter's attack being, quote, revealing. And when it came to Bob Caudle, he looked at this as really revealing of Sergeant Slaughter and the Marine's character attacking Steamboat and Flair after the bell. Of course, Roddy Piper saw things a little bit differently.
Roddy Piper, I got to ask you, that film was very revealing, but I think in a different light from what you had thought it was going to be. Because I think it really showed Sergeant Slaughter and his fellows in the true light, the way they really are.
That's true. It showed that Sergeant Slaughter and his privates don't take nothing from nobody. They rule where they walk. That's exactly what that showed. I mean, after all, they had two great wrestlers, and they're the world's heavyweight champion. Rick Steamboat, I believe, that could be maybe the uncrowned. Of course, I'm excluding myself because I beat them all. Great wrestlers in there. Sergeant Slaughter come in there by himself and just
by himself.
The only thing the privates were doing was warding off the evil spirits there. That's all they were doing.
I saw a lot of evil spirits in that ring in the form of Private Knoedel and Private Nelson. I tell you, we got action in this match right here. These two guys are really going at each other.
Oh,
look
nice
at move! Out of the corner.
Beautiful. Now, here's an example. Some young fellas coming up. They're getting so finely honed because of that $25,000 tournament. Everybody's training hard that the wrestling is really becoming exceptional. It really is.
All right, Roman, you're out there in Las Vegas, the city of sin. Have you ever seen anybody's privates get exposed in the to evil in the manner that Roddy Piper talked about?
I was thinking that they have to come up with a different term for Canoodle and Nelson. Just it, you know, they maybe they were trying to, maybe they weren't, but it's just so comical, I guess is the word, or I don't know. Whenever they talk about Slaughter's privates, it's just, oh gosh, there had to be a different term. You know, I couldn't have gone with Slaughter's army or Slaughter's recruits or something else, but interesting choice of terminology there.
Well, they do settle on Slaughter's recruits is what they're known by, and it is just very difficult for me to believe that Private Nelson and Private Canoodle, Slaughter's privates, it's hard for me to believe that the double entendre was not intentional there. Now, I kind of burned through a couple of segments there with Jake Roberts talking over the tape, and then obviously you get Bob Caudle and Roddy Piper talking about it, and that's essentially what this match is used for. It's used as background for those guys to talk about Slaughter and Flair being a big angle in the territory. It's the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. It's one of the top heels in the territory that are facing off against each other, and it ties Slaughter in with Ricky Steamboat as well as they're establishing the Marines. And it was a chance to get David Patterson a little bit of work in, but obviously that was the background. Any thoughts at all on Patterson and his performance, or just the whole deal with Slaughter and going after Rick Steamboat and Ricky Flair and Ric Flair?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting where, you know, like last week when I had mentioned that I thought they could have mentioned the time factor, and in the Jake promo, he said that they had wrestled for 35 minutes. I thought that was kind of good to say that, to kind of put the impression on the fans' mind that Steamboat and Flair were worn down and they were tired before they got attacked. You know, I thought that was kind of cool that he mentioned that. And, you know, like you said, the Patterson Bettenfield match was just a backdrop to talk about the Flair Steamboat Slaughter. It kind of reminded me like in Mid-South, Bill Watts used to do that. If he had a hot angle, then he oftentimes would follow it up with a match, you know, a match later or two matches down the road that maybe kind of had enhancement talent, and that would just give him an excuse to talk about the hot match or the hot angle. And that's what that Patterson-Bettenfield match was used for, just to talk about the Slaughter, Steamboat, and Flair.
Now, some of the tapes that we get up here on the network come right out of Charlotte or Greensboro. Some of them seem to come out of Tennessee, out of Lynchburg, Virginia, out of Morristown or Knoxville, wherever it was that we get some of the promos with Les Thatcher talking about some of the events coming to those areas. But most certainly, we've been getting Ann Arbor TV. And a couple of weeks ago, we had Big Bill Ward out there pimping how you could send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Briarbrand Drive and pick yourself up one of those fine bumper stickers. We have another commercial for that. First with Austin Idol, followed up by Ivan Koloff. We then go back to the studio where Bob is there with Ray Stevens, and he talks about Jimmy Valiant's attack on Ole Anderson, Stan Hansen, and Ivan Koloff last week. They go ahead and show the tape of that, and unfortunately, I have the real version of this somewhere with Boy from New York City playing. I will resist playing this angle, even though it is a good one because of the WWE overdub of Jimmy Valiant's music being so loud and so overbearing. It just takes away from everything. It also takes away from Jimmy Valiant standing there after they show the tape with Ray Stevens with some tinsel in his hand with a pair of very grape trunks on that say Purple Heart on the back of them, where Jimmy Valiant talks about, well, how Jimmy Valiant he is, and then they end up throwing it to break. When we come back from break, one of the guys that he did lay hands on, television champion Ivan Koloff, is there, and he is pissed. And that's good, because it starts off a pretty good trifecta of promos.
Here's the Russian Bear.
Yes, Valiant, you have to call up. I know what you want. You want the TV belt. You come and attack Koloff from behind when I'm in the ring. You're a big man, Valiant. Well, I see you. Come out here now. Any place. I don't care what arena, what kind of match. You just signed a match with Koloff. You tried to embarrass me. I'll show you what kind of man Koloff is made of. I'll wrap this chain around your head. I'll finish you off, Bennett. Nobody does this to the Russian Bear and gets away with it.
Austin Idol. Austin, in that match, looked like he was trying to show somebody
something. I can certainly understand how Carlisle feels. And this Jimmy Valiant is trying to make a big name by using a lot of people. I don't see him getting in my way. And if he does, Jackson, I'm going to send him right to the promised land with this big right of hand. But the main thing is, all the fan letters, all the frustrated females out there who have said, please, we don't care what you have to pay. We want to see Austin Idol. We want to see him wrestle on TV. We want to see this pretty face again. We want to see this sexy body again. We want to see this slim, trim, sensuous waistline again. We want to see the Las Vegas leg lock. We want to see the pretty gold jewelry. We want to see the greatest all-around athlete of all time, Jackson. And that's exactly what I've given to him out of the kindness of my heart. Am I right, Slaughter?
You know, I have a big match coming up with Jerry Briscoe, and I hope he is watching what I did, not only the Steamboat, but the Ric Flair. I know you're going to be a little bit more scared, because when I get done with you, Briscoe, I'm going to put the Cobra Clutch on you, and you'll wish you never heard the name Sergeant Slaughter. They all say I teamed up on those two guys, that it was all just the privates and myself. Well, if it's two, or if it's 10,000, Marines are one. They're one. They wrestle together, we fight together, and we're one. You better be ready for this show, because I am.
All right, fans, that's it here at ringside.
We got a powerhouse of promos there from Ivan Koloff, Austin Idol, and Sergeant Slaughter, Austin Idol, talking about his favorite subject himself as he's angling himself for an NWA World Heavyweight Championship shot. His tag team partner in some of these tournaments, as was hyped up for a couple of weeks, Ivan Koloff, has had his issues with Jimmy Valiant, once again exasperated, when Valiant got in the ring last week after attacking Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson, rolling into the ring and interfering in a match that Ivan Koloff was about to have, which ended that one before it ever got started, so it ties them together still. And then you get, of course, Sergeant Slaughter there at the end. Now you heard him mention Jerry right there, but he was actually wrestling Jack Briscoe. Actually, the next day, on Sunday the 7th in Charlotte, North Carolina, so a little bit of the slip of the tongue there from Sergeant Slaughter. After that, we got back into the ring where we got Mike Miller and Bill White against Jack and Jerry Briscoe. And we got classic Roddy Piper during this match as Piper told Bob Caudle that he was going to be pointing out everything that the Briscoes were doing wrong during the match. One of the things that Piper did wrong during the match was mentioned, quote, the best wrestler of 1981, unquote. That is not the name of the contest. The name of the contest is the wrestler that contributed the most to wrestling in 1981. And thankfully, it's almost over. But you can still get your votes in. And Roddy Piper would like for you to do that. Unless it's going to be for, like, Terry Taylor or Ricky Steamboat or something. In that case, don't bother. Here's Roddy Piper.
Not more excitingly. In two weeks, I shall be crowned the best wrestler of 1981. They will announce it in 2 weeks. So if you have any
You're already declaring yourself the winner?
Well, they're not, but I am, because I know that the people, they've got another week to send cards and letters in. Look at this. Jerry Briscoe working very hard. Now Jack should be in there. Another error.
While they're going for the leg, while they're sticking with the leg.
Fans, what Roddy Piper was alluding to just a moment ago was the fact that you've still got time to get your votes in for the wrestler that contributed the most to wrestling during 1981. Well, Roddy Piper says he's going to win that.
Well, right? I don't think they should bother sending in their cards. They've got only a week left, and don't bother sending them in, because I believe right now I am the official leader, and that's the way it would stay even if you sent your cards and letters in, because they'd be voting for me. I mean, they can't deny it. Jack Briscoe in there. Now they're sticking with the leg. That's one thing they are doing right. See, now Miller's not watching where he is. Miller's not taking full advantage of the ring. That's why I could do so much
He's
more.
Right out in the center of the ring. He doesn't have anywhere to go.
Oh, yes, you always got a way to go. Always got a way to go, because you make your way, Mr. Fox.
Now, as this was going on, we got the Universal Heartthrob Austin Idol showing back up with his camera standing around ringside. They don't hype that up too much, but it is very notable that he is out there filming Austin or Jack Briscoe and Jerry Briscoe. And it was also notable that earlier on during his match with Vinny Valentino, he made sure as he was posing to kind of call out Jack Briscoe, asking where the former NWA World Champion was as he flexed his gigantic bicep for everybody in the crowd. We'll play the finish of the match here in a minute, Roman, but Jack and Jerry Briscoe, tag team excellence personified, 70s legends for absolutely sure. Some people, as the 80s have gone on, I think some of the greatness of guys like Dory Funk Jr. and the Briscoes, I think sometimes gets lost a little bit to time, but this was a fine performance for them out there. Basically, much in the same way that Austin Idol did earlier on, just basically a showcase for the two.
Yeah, definitely. And boy, Piper wasn't lying. He picked apart every little thing the Briscoes did for the whole 5 minutes or however long the match lasted. If Jack was in the ring, Piper was all, why isn't Jerry in the ring? Jerry should be in the ring. And then if the Bill White, Mike Miller team had anything going on in their way, it was because the Briscoes did something wrong. And, you know, and Piper just picked this match to shreds. But, yeah, it was definitely a showcase for the Briscoes.
Match went about 5.5 minutes, ended up with Jack Briscoe making Mike Miller submit to the figure four, and we'll have everybody check that out right now.
I'm talking about against me. I submit.
Bill White. Was up on the top rope, and Jerry Briscoe just shook him right off.
Stick him with that leg. Miller having trouble walking. Nice drop kick.
Quick tag and a quick switch.
They missed on that tag. That referee allowed that. I would have caught that.
Leg lock. Going for the leg lock.
They couldn't have done that to me.
Referee says ring the bell. Jerry Briscoe and Bill White are going at it in the corner. Mike Miller, from that leg lock, had to submit as Jack Briscoe had it on him. No way he was going to get out of that, Roddy.
If they had horseshoes under each arm, they couldn't have done that to me.
All right, fans, watch it right here.
There you hear Roddy Piper popping Bob Cottle there at the end, talking about the horseshoes that the Briscoes would need. Plenty of them. They need them under both arms, and also they'd all have to beat Roddy Piper to death with them if they ever thought about defeating him. At least those are his words. Well, actually, they're my words, but he would say those exact same things if given the opportunity to, just in a much more colorful and exciting fashion, as Roddy Piper was wont to do. His feud that he would have with Jack Briscoe, which is going to be coming up here over the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship, with the money that gets put up and just the whole nine yards there. I am looking very forward to that. But we still got some time to go before that, and we get the Briscoes' victory there over Mike Miller and Bill White. It is then time for another round of bumper sticker promos, and I got to be honest here, Roman. I don't know how much of this is going to be audible. We had a promo a couple of weeks ago that I believe, I can't remember who it was, but we got the privates. We got the recruits of Don Cornoodle and Private Nelson bleeding in to the promo, and they were almost as audible. We kind of made that joke. Well, we have Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and Jack Briscoe joining Big Bill Ward to do a little bit of talking about these bumper stickers and saying hello to our friends in Ann Arbor. But as this is going on, either we have in the next studio a raucous interview with, of all people, Tony Anthony and Ron Ritchie taking place, or the overdub, you know, the master tape that's got Tony Anthony and Ron Ritchie, who are going to be in our next match, who are doing practice promos as this is going on. Either they were right next to them in the studio as this was taking place, or the overdub of this and the overlay of this tape was just so poorly done that you hear Tony Anthony and Ron Ritchie more than you hear Blackjack Mulligan and Jack Briscoe. And before I play this, what was more audible to you? Because there were some times that Jack and Mulligan spoke so low that it was much easier to actually hear Ron Ritchie and Tony Anthony talking to Bob Cottle.
Yeah, it was very hard to hear Jack and Mulligan Jr., and I was going to allude to that earlier on at the opening when Jack and Jerry came out. It sounded like Jack needed a cough drop or something. His throat sounded all kinds of screwed up.
Before I even go on, I'm going to actually increase the audio on this, and I think you just heard it bleed through there, so I apologize for that. I'm actually going to increase the audio on this to make it a little bit easier for everybody to hear as it plays through, just so you can hear, because again, I think if you go back and you rewind this and play this, you'll probably be able to make out both sets of promos in full.
And so many times, fans ask us for a souvenir of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. Here in my hand, you see what we call a bumper sticker, a Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling bumper sticker. You can have one of these at no cost, except all we ask you to do is send a stamped, self-addressed envelope to Mid-Atlantic, bumper sticker, 421 Briar Bend Drive, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28209. Copy that address down. Send a stamped, self-addressed envelope to Mid-Atlantic, bumper sticker, 421 Briar Bend Drive, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28209. And in the mail very soon, you'll be receiving one of these very attractive Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling bumper stickers. I'd like to call in now a couple of the outstanding wrestlers, none other than Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and Jack Briscoe.
Well, I tell you what, it's an honor to be out here with somebody such as Jack Briscoe, former world champion. And Jack is chasing that title right now, and I guess that's the main reason that he's in this area. And just if it happens to be up in Michigan, where he's going to be fighting for that title, I tell you what, I'd like to be right there by his side watching him go for that title.
Well, it's been quite a while since I've wrestled in Michigan, and of course, I'm looking forward to going back to it, and all of the great time, of course, is gathered around here. And of course, all the champions, just such as Roddy Piper, Sergeant Slaughter, and of course, the world champion, Ric Flair. And that's what we're all in this game for, is to be a champion. And I'm going to be looking for the end of the championship.
Well, I'll tell you, it's going to be very soon that we're coming up into this area. I'll tell you, I know I'm speaking for Jack, too. I'm going to say, when we do come up there, it is going to be the very best in wrestling, and that we always have the very top talent. And Jack and myself, the Pipers, Ivan Koloff, Ole Anderson, Gene Anderson, the Ninja, all of them. You look forward to them, because when we come up there, we come up there for one thing. We come up there for the wrestling, for the best wrestling that there is. So we look for you there.
Jack, closing word for you.
Well, just be looking forward to seeing all the fans of Michigan when we'll be there soon. And looking forward to seeing everyone.
Well, you heard sort of Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and Jack Briscoe there. You also heard Bob Cottle. That's it from ringside as he interviewed Ron Ritchie and Tony Anthony. Didn't really hear all of Ron Ritchie and Tony Anthony, but no matter what they were saying, I'm sure it made me miss Buddy Landell with his full head of black hair out there. One of the better guys to do interviews on the come up, although Ron Ritchie doing interviews from Mid-Atlantic much better in 1982 than he was in 1980. And in fact, was called over by David Crockett the week prior to say some things about Sergeant Slaughter and give his opinion on Slaughter's attack of Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat in Greensboro on February 21st. So we get Ron Ritchie and Tony Anthony teamed up against Sergeant Slaughter's privates, and decent match, went about 7 minutes. Colin Piper mentioned the privates have had success in the tag tournament, and Roddy Piper did a really, really good job running down some information on what's been taking place. Rowan, I want to get your thoughts on this as soon as I play Roddy Piper kind of giving everybody an area update on what's been taking place not only around some towns in the Carolinas, but the big one down at the Omni in Atlanta.
Roddy Piper talking about this young combination here. I understand already that Jim Nelson and Don Canoda, they have won one of the tournaments in one of the cities in Fayetteville, North Carolina, I believe.
It shows the greatness of Sergeant Slaughter. They have won the tournament in Fayetteville, in Greensboro. It's so exciting. In Greensboro, Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson are the winners. In Charlotte, right here in the Queen City, it was who? The Briscoes.
That's right.
But
Jack and Jerry Briscoe.
Now we're starting to see a pattern here. We're starting to see what a crossbody block. Beautiful. Now we're starting to see a pattern because I want a point of interest here. Also, Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson were the winners of the tournament in Atlanta. Now that's two tournaments
that's
for them.
Right.
Now we're starting to see who's been trained the finest. It's really getting exciting now. It's really starting to come out. And look at these young gentlemen here. Right there in Fayetteville. Look at them. They're your champions.
Awesome job by Roddy Piper there, putting over Private Nelson and Private Carnoodle. Also an awesome job giving a rundown of what's been happening in the area, why those tournaments now matter for everybody, who has been winning them in the different areas, which of course pops the fans in that area to hear what took place on their show being mentioned on TV. Would pop people like me who lived outside of the area to hear these cool things that were taking place all over the place. And really, before we get into the finish of the match and what kind of took place during it, just really, Roman, another tour de force for Roddy Piper throughout this episode. And I know we had somebody ask the question, and I don't think we had a chance to answer it a couple of weeks ago. Who do you think Roddy Piper was better with or more effective with? With Gordon Solie down in WTBS in Atlanta or in Charlotte in Greensboro, with Bob Cottle and the work that he would do on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. I got to be honest, I'm a little bit biased, and obviously Gordon Solie is Gordon Solie in WTBS at the time that Roddy Piper was doing those episodes. Obviously, it had a lot more national impact and appeal and all of that sort of stuff and forever and ever, amen, but when you get a chance to hear the report to me that Roddy Piper and Bob Cottle have, I think it's just so outstanding, and he adds so much to these episodes. Not to say that he didn't in Georgia, because he absolutely did, but they had a lot of great guys, Ole Anderson, Jake Roberts, Paul Ellering, that would join up and do really good work alongside Gordon Solie. I think in some ways what he's done with David Crockett and with Bob Cottle on Mid-Atlantic has been in some ways just far superior.
Well, he was great to listen to in either territory. And, you know, something that, this is an obvious statement, but back then there was no social media. There was no internet. So Piper was definitely the conduit to what was going on. So for him to mention who won those tournaments, that is a big deal, because you couldn't go home and look it up on the internet and see what was going on. So by Piper telling you that Hanson and Ole won the one in the Omni, unless you were in the Omni, you didn't know about that. So that was, I thought that was very effective of him to do that, him to put over Kernoodle and Nelson winning a tournament, and just to keep the fans up to date as to what was going on, since they've been hyping this tournament for the last several weeks.
What did you think about the match? The match went about, I got the count at 6 minutes and 49 seconds. Don Kernoodle ends up pinning Tony Anthony after a really remedial version of the Slaughter Cannon, where Kernoodle came off the top rope as Nelson held Anthony in a bear hug and Kernoodle came down with a clothesline on top of him to get the pin. It was, you know, again, some good back and forth. Obviously, they didn't know what they had with Tony Anthony at the time, just starting out. Ron Ritchie, they had a little bit of an experience behind him. He was returning to the area. He was not a preliminary guy anymore. He had moved up the card a little bit, much kind of in the way that Nelson and Kernoodle had been, with Nelson being the new guy, and Kernoodle, even though they were on different sides of the ledger, had been around for a little while, was on the upper touch, and they were doing something with those guys, and they weren't sure what they were doing with Ron Ritchie and Tony Anthony, but of course they were going to take the L here, but they got in a little bit of offense, and they didn't look pathetic, but what was more important was, at least to me, the Privates starting to gel a little bit more as a team and really being aggressive, and that being the main focus of this team was the fact that anything that they were green with or any mistakes that they made were made up by the fact that they were going out there with a mission to destroy on behalf of Sergeant Slaughter.
Exactly. And to go back to what you were saying earlier, the pairing of Piper and Solie compared to Piper and Cottle, I thought this match illustrated just the difference between Piper and Cottle. You know, there was times in there where Piper would commend Kernoodle and Nelson on their teamwork, and then Cottle would say they're double teaming, and just the little contrast in styles there I thought really worked well in the Mid-Atlantic area with Piper and Cottle, because they didn't argue a lot or anything, but you could obviously tell that they had different viewpoints on things, and I thought that was a good contrast in styles, and it helped Piper get over more so he could get his point across compared to Cottle, who saw things through the average fan's eyes.
Absolutely. And I think that folksiness of Uncle Bob, whereas Gordon, again, just different style, different projection was different with those two gentlemen. And as whereas Gordon would do more of an eye roll and Roderick Piper, the comments of him, you know, Cottle being, he would either play into it, you know, kind of, I don't want to say dumb, but basically a little bit more innocent, which would set up Piper for some stuff, or hit him with something folksy that would stop Piper dead in his tracks, which was not happening as much with Solie and Piper as well, too. Again, different sides of the same coin. Roddy Piper was tremendous with both of them. But yeah, I mean, I thought with Bob Cottle, I think because of the structure of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, I think Roddy Piper, definitely, you could argue, and certainly we are, you know, added as much or more to there as he did to Georgia Championship Wrestling. But kind of digress there a little bit. We will get to the finish of Ron Ritchie and Tony Anthony against the Privates with a very excited Roddy Piper putting the privates over once again because, hey, you got to make sure that you cover your privates.
Off of the rope, and again that elbow to the back of the head. Twice now, Anthony's been caught with that.
Yeah, well, he won't get caught a third time because I don't think he's going to get a chance because he's hurt now. Nice shot.
Granado just plants those big feet right in the face of Anthony.
Yeah, well, that's what you get for being dumb. You don't fool me once, you're a fool. Fool me twice, I'm a fool. Look at the tag work. Isn't it tremendous?
Here's Nelson holding him up.
1,001.
For Granado over the rope.
There you go.
Off of that top rope with Hook
and leg,
line.
Look at leg, leg, hand, leg.
No way he's going to get up the rope. A count of three. I think they were really vicious in that match too, Piper.
Fayetteville champions right there. Absolutely, and it really shows the teamwork that Sergeant Slaughter here has induced with these fellas. Look at that. Now you're talking 1,001, 1,002, 1,003. Look at that, beautiful. Not only that, but when he covers him, he crosses both legs. Takes care of Sergeant Slaughter. He's doing a tremendous job with these young fellas.
There you hear Piper put over the privates. We then get a show-closing promo alongside Bob Cottle with Private Nelson and Private Canoodle, the latter of which coins the phrase, if they get in our way, they must pay. I believe he would amend that later on as he would team up with Sergeant Slaughter and face off against Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood. And, oh yeah, they have incurred the wrath of Ricky Steamboat, not Jay Youngblood, but Ric Flair. And Ricky Steamboat makes an appearance here at the end of the show to make sure that Don Carnoodle knows that he betrayed him, something that Ricky Steamboat wouldn't forget for a long, long time.
All right, Private Canoodle.
I'll tell you something right now, Cottle. We're sick and tired of all this crying. By Jake Roberts, we're sick and tired of the crying. We got a motto in Slaughter's Corps. If they put us in a tight zone and they get in our way, they must pay, right?
That's it. There's only two good men, and you're looking at two of them, Private Nelson and Private Canoodle, and our Sergeant Slaughter. He's taught both of us that maneuver off the top rope, and we're going to be leaving tag teams laying in the middle of the ring. That goes for everybody. The Briscoes, Black Jake Morgan Jr., Jake Roberts, Mike George, and it goes through. Yeah, we got to do this.
Yes, Steamboat, it goes for you, brother.
All right, Rick Steamboat. And we just walked right in. Right in with Private Canoodle and Nelson. It was two against one, and they took off. Rick Steamboat right here, Rick. I tell you.
You know something, right here in Greensboro, Bob, right in Greensboro, I lost a very, very close friend of mine, Don Carnoodle. We palled around, we drove many, many miles, we talked everything over. We were close friends just like that. But in one evening, I lost him as a friend, but I gained Ric Flair back. Everybody around here was wondering about him with all the pressures mounting upon him as a world heavyweight champion, all the traveling, all the hours that he got to spend, all the top talent. Well, right here and now, when you showed that film earlier, it showed what kind of man he really is. He came in to help me against those two bums, Nelson, Granudo, and their nemesis, their big, tough man, the man that's 6'5", 300 pounds, Sergeant Slaughter. You think you're big and tough? Well, how tough are you one-on-one? You outweigh me by 100 pounds. You stand 4 inches taller than me, but I'm calling your shot, brother. One-on-one. Bring it
See
on.
See you next week, man.
As we continue on with this show, we will get to March of 1983, the road to Greensboro, the final conflict, Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood in a cage against Sergeant Slaughter and Don Carnoodle. A year from now, it will be referenced about Don Carnoodle becoming that turncoat, being that mole in the locker room, being that guy at Sergeant Slaughter's right hand to go in and to melt down the babyface locker room, to be the evil and the poison inside of it, something that Ricky Steamboat wouldn't forget. The long-term cool stuff, the good stuff, the good booking. Well, that's why we're talking about these shows today, 30-something years later. But, Roman, there you hear Ricky Steamboat give his opinion on Don Carnoodle at the end there. You hear the privates talk about what went down in Greensboro on the 21st between Steamboat, Flair, Slaughter, and themselves. Any thoughts as we end the show and as they wrap up their promo?
I thought it was very cool to see Steamboat come out and all fired up like that. Normally, Steamboat's the calm, docile gentleman, and to see him have fire and be a little pissed off, I thought it was cool. I remember about 5 years ago, I talked to him at Cauliflower Alley Club, and I mentioned to him that him and Tito Santana were the only two guys I could think of that had a really, really long wrestling career, had success and everything, but never once worked as a heel. And he had told me that he begged Pat Patterson to turn him heel, and Patterson wouldn't do it. And when you hear interviews with Steamboat and he's fired up and everything, I think it would have been kind of fun to see him at one point in his career be a heel, you know, with his judo chops and everything. And or he could have even reverted back to his original name of Richard Blood. When you got a last name of Blood, that just sounds like a heel name. And tying that in with Tito, at one point Tito actually wrestled as Richard Blood. But I know I'm rambling, but it was good to see Steamboat get fired up.
You know, and I wonder, you know, it would have had to been for me. Ricky at times would come off, and I know some people feel this about him. And the funny part is, I think there were times where it seemed like the major magazines had a feeling or were given an Iggy that Steamboat was going to turn. So you would always get once in a while in The Wrestler and Inside Wrestling these weird headlines of like Steamboat, you know, can't listen to the fans anymore, or despondent Steamboat, or him being moody or something like that. And like, you sometimes hear that in the interviews where, you know, oh God, Slaughter, you're outweighing me by 100 pounds. And it's like, I wonder, you know, could Steamboat have pulled off anything remotely close to a badass heel? Not at, you know, later on. Later on in his career, like 94, after the run with Flair the second time around in like between 89, that time, and he came coming back and like the team with Brian Pillman and Dustin Rhodes and all that sort of stuff, like that era, I think he could have done it. I don't think he could have did it back then. Do you think he could have? I don't know if he could have pulled it off. I think he would have been better off as like the whiny chicken shit Tully Blanchard type.
He was such a tremendous worker. I wouldn't put anything past Steamboat. With the judo chops and everything, you know, if he were to like do those to the throat or something, I just think he was just such a phenomenal talent. I really think he could have pulled it off. And, you know, it's something that's fun as a wrestling fan. We'll never know. You know, I mean, we could speculate about it till we're blue in the face and something fun to talk about. Unfortunately, we'll never know. But I think it would have been fun just to see him try it for 6 months.
Hey, you know, another route they could have taken would just be what Dory Funk Jr. and Jack Briscoe did, which was be the disingenuous type that wouldn't pull out that chop to the throat until he absolutely needed it and the ref was looking the other way and he was in the town, you know, against the baby face. You know, he probably would have been great for that and trying to explain it away later on in the way that Jack Briscoe or Dory Funk did. So, yeah, I mean, it is amazing that he and Tito Santana both, and I know that somebody will point out, well, Ricky Steamboat had that thing in TNA. None of that counted for anything that took place there. It was like saying Tony Schiavone had a heel turn against Mike Tenay there. No, let's not let any of that influence any of our thoughts on wrestling from that time. But one thing that does influence our thoughts on wrestling from way back when, results, and we got a bunch of them. And we have, unfortunately, we have entered, since it is March of 1982, the last month of Leroy McGurk's territory, trying to be saved. George Scott down there, the former tri-state area. The taping of this Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling show took place on Wednesday, March 3rd. On Wednesday, March 3rd in Springfield, Missouri, Paul Jones was defeating Jimmy Snuka, which would be setting up some NWA championship matches with Ric Flair coming to the area. You will hear about those momentarily. The next night after the television tapings, there were a couple of shows. One was in Burlington, North Carolina at Cummings High School. Ray Stevens defeated Roddy Piper. Now, imagine this at your local high school's Ray Stevens defeating Roddy Piper. Oh, yeah, and by the way, Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood defeated Austin Idol and John Studd. So there were some other matches on that show, but those were the two that really mattered. The same night over in Hillsville, Virginia, Woodlawn Intermediate School, Black Jack Mulligan Jr. faced off against Sergeant Slaughter, and Johnny Weaver faced off against Lord Alfred Hayes. On the 5th in Charleston, South Carolina, at County Hall, the Ninja defeated Porkchop Cash by DQ, and Velvet McIntyre won a battle royal to earn a shot at women's champion, the Fabulous Moolah. The Battle Royal also included a bunch of Moolahites, including Donna Christianello, Leilani Kai, Joyce Grable, Princess Victoria, and Wendy Richter. Fabulous Moolah then went on to beat Velvet McIntyre. Carl Fergie also defeated Ron Ritchie on that show. Most of the rest of the crew was in Cincinnati or Knoxville. In Cincinnati, Ricky Steamboat defeated Austin Idol in the main event. Tommy Rich defeated Sergeant Slaughter by DQ. Roddy Piper went to a double countout with Bob Armstrong, who he'd been feuding with on Atlanta TV. Ole Anderson defeated Ray Stevens. Jake Roberts defeated Private Nelson. And there were a couple of other matches on that show as well. Also on March 5th in Knoxville, Tennessee, Johnny Weaver defeated Lord Alfred Hayes in a steel cage match, while Blackjack Mulligan Jr. also won a cage match, his against Big John Studd. Also on that show, Jimmy Valiant defeated the Super Destroyer in a Loser Leaves Town versus Mask match, and I will reveal who the Super Destroyer is momentarily. On March 6th in Knoxville at WBIR TV Studios, we got their television tapings. That night in Randleman, North Carolina, Roddy Piper and John Studd defeated Ricky Steamboat and Ray Stevens, while in Florence, South Carolina, Jake Roberts defeated Sergeant Slaughter. Now, on March 6th, at the Bluefield, West Virginia Brush Fork Armory, Ivan Koloff faced off against Jimmy Valiant, Johnny Weaver faced off against Lord Alfred Hayes in a lumberjack match, and Jay Youngblood defeated the Super Destroyer in a Mask versus Loser Leaves Town match. Now, if you go back a couple of episodes to the very beginning of this program, you will hear the promos for this show between Youngblood, Super Destroyer, Johnny Weaver, and Lord Alfred Hayes all going after each other, talking about this show. The Super Destroyer, if anybody remembers from the promos, Don Kernoodle. He had a bus pass all ready to go for Jay Youngblood, but unfortunately he was the one who took it out of the area, losing his mask, and he was then gone to just be Private Don Kernoodle. The next night in Roanoke on March 7th, Dusty Rhodes defeated Sergeant Slaughter by DQ, and the Briscoes defeated Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen. At the Charlotte Coliseum that night, Jack Briscoe defeated Sergeant Slaughter by DQ. Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen defeated Ray Stevens and Dusty Rhodes. Dory Funk Jr. went to a draw with Billy Robinson. And very notably, Atsushi Onita defeated Chavo Guerrero to win the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Championship. On the same show, Alexis Smirnoff and Ivan Koloff defeated Giant Baba and Genichiro Tenryu by DQ. Jumbo Tsuruta went to a double countout with Tommy Rich, and Jerry Briscoe defeated David Patterson. That brings us to another show which took place on March 7th as well in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Maple Leaf Gardens, the delayed $25,000 Cadillac Cup, but because it was taking place in Canada, actually became the $27,000 Cadillac Cup. Here are some very unique promos from that time. The first from Austin Idol and Roddy Piper, which were done at the WPCQ studios. The next coming from Vince McMahon doing his best Howard Cosell impression, interviewing Pat Patterson, who didn't end up showing up for the shows, as well as the East-West connection that did, including a great line by Adrian Adonis about what the NWA means. And then finally, Big John Studd talking to Billy Red Lions about his appearance in the Cadillac Cup.
With 7:30 p.m., a super spectacular card you don't want to miss in Toronto's Maple Leaf Gardens, featuring a one-night tournament. And the grand prize is a $27,000 1982 Cadillac. Already entered, Jay Youngblood, Dino Bravo, the Dean of Wrestling, Johnny Weaver, plus handsome Jimmy Valiant, Ricky Steamboat, Jesse the Body Ventura, Adrian Adonis, Blackjack Mulligan Jr., the Destroyer, Jake the Snake Roberts, Big John Studd, and direct from Nevada, the master of the Las Vegas leg lock.
That's right, not only the master of that, but master of all kinds of tournament wrestling. All the top dogs are coming in from all over the country because they won that $27,000. They won that $27,000 Cadillac. Well, I want to go on record right now that I've already ordered a custom-made Rolls-Royce grill to go right on the front of it. And to have the initials AI, Austin Idol. That Cadillac, darling, belongs to me, and it's going to go right in my three-car garage, right next to my Mercedes-Benz, and right next to my Porsche Roadster. And then the Cadillac is going in right in line with them, darling. And there's not a man alive that can knock Austin Idol off. I don't care who it is. I don't care even if it's Mercedes-Benz. You can park it right next to the moped. You see what we're talking about? It's $27,000, Mr. Affinato. Oh, you're such a wonderful man. I know all the ladies are after you, sir. But $27,000, that's more than you make in a year. $27,000, you know that I would give my grandma to the Russians for $27,000. Don't you think for 1 second that you could stand up against me?
I blow 27 grand on the blackjack table in Las Vegas, and I don't bat an eye. I'm going to be the one to let the hot air out of those bagpipes.
Yeah.
Cadillac Wrestling Tournament taking place tomorrow night in Toronto at the Maple Leaf Gardens. Promoter Frank Sunny has a whole host of extraordinarily gifted athletes, the caliber of which second to none, ladies and gentlemen. In the Cadillac tournament, we'll see Jesse the Body Ventura, Roddy Piper, Ricky Steamboat. The list goes on and on, including Dino Bravo, along with Pat Patterson and many others. But right now, we'd like to introduce to you Pat Patterson. Mr. Patterson, one of the principals in the 82 Cadillac tournament tomorrow night. Are you primed, peaked, and ready?
Well, Vince, you know, like I said last week, some of the best wrestlers in the world are going to be in that tournament. And the prestige of winning a tournament, this was what counts for me. It's not so much the Cadillac. And Vince, you know, you got Jesse the Body Ventura, Adrian Adonis, and then you've got also a good friend of mine, Dino Bravo. Yeah, I may have to go in the ring and wrestle with him. But Vince, this is the way it's got to be, and I'm looking forward to it. First of all, I know that Toronto is a favorite wrestling town of mine, and I'm looking forward to see everyone.
Thank you very much. Pat Patterson, ladies and gentlemen, in the Cadillac tournament. Two more individuals in the Cadillac tournament joining us now, Adrian Adonis, Jesse the Body Ventura.
Well, I'll tell you something. Names don't impress me. Frank Tunney's delicatessen don't impress me. And Maple Leaf Gardens doesn't impress me. And the NWA doesn't impress me. No wages allowed. I don't know how they came up with the Cadillac. But you know what's going to impress me and the body? Is us winning that Cadillac and disgracing all
only
those
one
so-called Canadians.
Let me tell you something. I'll tell you what's going to happen, Frank Tunney. The East-West Connection, Adrian Adonis, Jesse Ventura. We're going to win the Cadillac. Going to end up us two in the ring at the end.
Nice.
We're going to win the Cadillac.
Yeah, we're just going to shake hands.
And then shake hands.
High five.
And chase, Frank Tunney around the arena with the Cadillac.
What play?
And the man who is standing next to me, Big John Studd, he's also going
to
be there.
That's right. Let me explain something to these ignorant Canadians out here about how this tournament is going to be run. The promoter, Frank Tunney, is going to step in the center of the ring, and he's going to have a hat there. And he's going to have all these names stuffed in the hat. And he's going to reach in that hat, and he's going to pull out a name. It's going to say Ricky Steamboat. And he'll reach in another, pull out another name, and he'll say he'll wrestle John Studd. And then I'm going to step in the ring, and I'm going to beat him in two. Then he's going to reach in the ring again. He's going to pull out another name, and he's going to match him up with somebody else. And it's going to go on and on and on until finally, listen to me close. Finally, there's only one man left, and that man will walk out of the Maple Leaf Garden with a brand new 1982 Cadillac. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I'm still the Canadian heavyweight champion. Take a good look at me. I left Angelo Mosca laying in the center ring. I pinned him for 1, 2, 3, and somehow he retained the belt. Well, we'll take care of that later. But back to the Cadillac tournament. Bob Slaughter said it. John Studd has the edge. I have the size, the strength, and the power, and I just happen to need a new Cadillac.
Remember, that's Sunday, March 7th, 7:30 p.m., Toronto's Maple Leaf Garden.
Well, who couldn't use a new Cadillac? Before I go on with the results of that show, Roman, any thoughts on that bunch of promos there, including Adrian Adonis, who I had to think about it after he said it. I'm not sure who had a more adversarial relationship with the NWA in some ways than Adrian Adonis did, for not to be a WWF lifer. I mean, he, with Southwest Championship Wrestling, wanted to crown their own world champion to break away from the NWA. He was first in line when Georgia looked like they may be splitting away from the NWA and Ole Anderson was having his frustrations. He opened the door for a lot of those guys to come in. Adrian Adonis, for a short time, was one of them. He never really had, other than, I guess, in Portland. I'm trying to think of where Adrian Adonis really had moments of glory, you know, even as Keith Frankie. Obviously, he had been in Mid-Atlantic, and he had cut his teeth in some territories. But as Adrian Adonis. You think about him really with the WWF and the AWA, and that's really about it. And the ironic part, at least to me, is with his skill set and the kind of wrestler that he was, he would have been far better in some ways to be in the NWA, you know?
Yes, definitely. He was. People remember him as the overweight Adrian Adonis and prancing around with a bow in his hair and all that, but he was a tremendous talent. And, you know, we talk about Ray Stevens taking bumps and doing stuff. Adonis was right there with him in a lot of regards, and not bad on the mic, but a tremendous talent. And he definitely could have fit in the NWA if he had decided to go that route.
Man, you know, both I think he and Buddy Rose both cut their teeth with Vern Gagne, and you think about the weight that both of them ballooned to later on, yet still the work that they were able to pull in and the skills that they had. You know, obviously they were outliers. Not everybody could do that, but, you know, the training I'm sure that they had and that drive, that inner drive that they had was certainly impressive. Adrian Adonis did make it, and so did Jesse Ventura. In fact, Jesse Ventura had himself a pretty good day, especially if you go by the minute, because he didn't wrestle a lot of minutes, which was good when it came to Jesse the Body Ventura. Unfortunately, Pat Patterson did not make it, so there was no threat of him going in there against his friend Dino Bravo, who went in there with Roddy Piper in the first round and lost to the Hot Rod in 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Also in the first round, Austin Idol defeated Jake the Snake Roberts. Jimmy Valiant defeated Tim Gerard. Ricky Steamboat defeated Adrian Adonis by DQ. Big John Studd defeated John Bonello in 3 minutes and 4 seconds. And probably if Pat Patterson was coming in, that would have been the spot for him to be in to probably take the fall to John Studd. Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeated the Destroyer, Dick Beyer, in 9 minutes and 10 seconds by DQ. Jesse Ventura defeated Mike Rotundo in 2 minutes and 57 seconds via pinfall, so I'm not sure exactly what went down there. And Johnny Weaver drew with Jay Youngblood in 10 minutes, but Johnny Weaver advanced on the referee's decision. When you're the booker, you can do that. He ended up losing in the next round to Jesse Ventura in 4 minutes and 2 seconds, so we've now got Jesse Ventura for 6 minutes and 59 seconds over 2 matches, and easy money for him so far. Blackjack Mulligan Jr. went to a double countout with John Studd. Ricky Steamboat defeated Roddy Piper via pinfall, but when you get one match going out of control, back in the day, it didn't lead to a three-way. What it led to was another match that would fall out, and Roddy Piper attacked Ricky Steamboat after the match, ramming him into the ring post. Because of that, Ricky Steamboat was unable to continue, which meant the next match between Jimmy Valiant and Austin Idol would give that person a path to the finals to go up against Jesse Ventura, and that's what we got with Jimmy Valiant defeating Austin Idol in 2 minutes and 16 seconds by countout. Jimmy Valiant then went on to beat Jesse Ventura in 5 minutes and 2 seconds via pinfall in the final to win the Cadillac in a match that had 2 referees in it. As I look up and down this show, the longest match, Ricky Steamboat, Roddy Piper, 12:27. Studd and Mulligan Jr., the double countout in 12:10. And Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeating the Destroyer in 9:10. Those were the longest matches other than the Johnny Weaver, Jay Youngblood 10-minute time limit. So in and out of there quickly for that match and that show that had to be rescheduled because of a blizzard, which knocked that show out that was supposed to take place in February. That leads us to the next night, Sunday in Greenville, South Carolina on March 8th. Dusty Rhodes defeated Sergeant Slaughter by DQ. Ivan Koloff went to a double DQ with Jimmy Valiant, and Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen defeated the Briscoes. That same day in South Hill, Virginia at Parkview High School, Ricky Steamboat and Jake Roberts defeated Austin Idol and Private Canoodle, who was a sub for Roddy Piper on that show. On the 8th in Brantford, Ontario, they held their TV tapings for Maple Leaf Wrestling. John Studd faced off against Jay Youngblood with a battery of other matches taking place as well. On this same day, way out in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Ric Flair was defeating number one Paul Jones by disqualification to retain the NWA World Championship. Rip Hawk and Sweet Hansen defeated Steve Bolus and Scott McGee. Eddie Mansfield defeated C.V. Offey. And by the way, it was at this point that it made me think that with Jimmy Valiant being in the area, and he went to a no contest with Bruno Sammartino Jr., and he would actually be exiting out of this area very, very soon. It made me think about, I wonder if it was George Scott that ended up getting C.V. Afi into the WWF as a replacement for Jimmy Snuka, or an attempted replacement for both Jimmy Snuka and the Tonga Kid after both of those guys left there in 1984. It just kind of made me think about that, seeing C.V. Afi's name come up so much in these results over from Midwest Championship Wrestling, which was at the time the new name of Tri-State before Bill Watts would come in and take it over. The next night on March 9th in Columbia, South Carolina, Ricky Steamboat and Ray Stevens defeated Austin Idol and Roddy Piper. That same night in Christiansburg, Virginia, at the high school, that show included Ivan Koloff, Jimmy Valiant, Jake Roberts, The Ninja, Terry Taylor, amongst others. And then the next night in Springfield, Missouri, on March 10th, saw Ric Flair once again defeat Paul Jones by disqualification to retain the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. George Wells and Frank Hill defeated Rip Hawk and Sweet Hansen. Eddie Mansfield defeated Bruno Sammartino Jr. El Toro defeated C.V. Afi, and Steve Bolus defeated Scott McGee. And that leads us to the tapings which took place at WPCQ Studios in Charlotte, North Carolina. I, of course, will not spoil you with those results, but I will let you know what the WW Network preview is for the show, which we will be reviewing for our next episode on this edition of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. The duo of Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen continue to show their dominance when they take to the ring to compete in a tag team match main event, plus Johnny Valiant, Ivan Koloff, the Briscoes, and many, many more in action. And there are all the results from around the area, at least the ones that mattered. And, of course, the preview from the WWE Network about the show we will be reviewing in our next episode. And, Roman, we already put a bow on this past show. Any thoughts as we look forward to next week, and any thoughts on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling or anything in general?
Well, it would have been fun to, even if it was edited, I mean, highlights of the Cadillac tournament, that would have been kind of cool to see some of that. Just looking forward to seeing Hansen and Ole, you know, for years collecting the After magazines, you know, anything I would read about Hansen and Ole, and I was just always intrigued by that tag team. So anytime you get a chance to see them is always good, and we're going to see a little bit more of them in the future. The Briscoes are back. Just looking forward to a lot of the tag team action that's going on in the Mid-Atlantic area.
The Lariat and the Hook Brother. God, I love that name now. And I actually heard Stan Hansen cut a promo about facing the Road Warriors in 1984 at this around this time in 1984, where he's teaming up with Bundy, and he calls him the Splash and the Lariat. And I just realized that anything and the Lariat sounds good, but man, the Hook and the Lariat sounds awesome. That should have been the official tag team name of Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen. But Roman, my man, I want to thank you so much again for putting up with me and my schedule this week and cranking out another Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling podcast episode. And I want to thank everybody out there for tuning in. If you happen to like to give reviews to things like iTunes, we would really appreciate a 5-star review. Those types of outlets really love when you give 5-star reviews to podcasts like this. We love it as well, too. So if you could do that, that would be great. We all benefit from that one. That would be wonderful and fantastic. What would also be wonderful and fantastic is if you jump on Facebook, become a member of our Facebook group, become a member of our Facebook family, become a follower of us on Twitter, on YouTube, on SoundCloud, on Instagram, all of those places. Just look for at Mid-Atlantic Pod. You'll see the logo, you'll know it's us, and you'll really be helping us out a lot that way as well, too. Twitter and Facebook, we are the most active on this day in JCP TV history. Also, hashtag EverydayArn, where we get to celebrate classic Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling and the greatness that was Arn Anderson. I want to thank once again all of you out there for joining us. I want to thank Brian Lass and everybody who is involved with the Arcadian Vanguard Network. My name is Mike Sempervivi. For Roman Gomez, I executive produce this show, but that doesn't really matter. The bottom line is, it's a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network.
And that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.